morning. Have you ever had the opportunity to meet somebody through someone that you already know? And you want to meet this person because they know them and they have respect for them. I recently had this experience through one of my favorite spiritual writers, Richard Rohr. You've heard me probably mention him in homilies other times. He has quoted quite a bit someone else that I recently discovered through writing and through some talks he gave. His name is Parker Palmer. Parker Palmer, it seems, is an author, an educator, does some work on spirituality and ministry, and has offered some talks and some writings that I've recently kind of encountered. I'd like to share with you this morning just a couple of thoughts that he shared in order to look at our first reading from the Acts of the Apostles, to put that reading in some kind of context this morning. We've oftentimes heard in the spiritual journey that one of the challenges is to discover our true self, to let go of the false self and discover this true self. Well, Parker Palmer uses a language that really spoke to me recently when I heard his thoughts that kind of speak to that a little bit. Parker Palmer suggests that we tend to live our lives in illusion. We tend to create illusion around ourselves to kind of try to find meaning, to try to find understanding of the world around us. And we shape these things in our lives. And oftentimes they're kind of like an illusion for us. And he will suggest to us that it is when we're walking through life that we become disillusioned. When those illusions are so challenged and crumble and collapse, that in those times of disillusionment, that's when God can finally get through to us. That's when we can truly meet God, and God truly can meet us. It's a powerful thing to think about. He gives some examples of these illusions. Not saying these are the illusions, but we have many, many ways of looking at them. But here's a few that he suggests. I have to write them down, make sure I can remember them. One of the illusions, he says, we live in is the illusion of scarcity. Scarcity. You know, we go through our lives with this fear that there's just not enough. There's not enough. There's not going to be enough. And we try to find ways to create enough. And our lives can be so driven by that. And the fear of there not being enough, that it can hinder us from sharing and giving of ourselves. We can begin to hold on to an illusion of scarcity. Another illusion he suggests is one I'm sure we've heard before, but I am what I do. You know, I'm so identified with what I do that we cease to be human beings and we become more human doings. And when the doing is taken away, when what I do is taken away from me, oftentimes my whole meaning is lost. And that's a very, very challenging time in our lives. When we so identify with what we do, we can lose a sense of who we are. Another illusion he talks about is this: only cultivating rewarded talent. Only cultivating rewarded talent. Grasp that a bit? In other words, we only cultivate in our lives, in our world, that which will be rewarded. That which will, I would use the word may, we know will find success. I know, personal opinion here, well, it's personal opinion, it is a personal opinion, but when I look at our school system sometimes, we seem to want to cultivate in children only those things that are going to be rewarded later on. And sometimes it's not a bad thing, but we can lose a sense of cultivating other things in children's lives and what we're trying to share with them. And another illusion he talks about is everything must be measurable. Everything must be measurable. You have to be able to weigh it, shape it, own it, get a sense of measuring it for it to be of any value. If we can't measure it, we sometimes don't put value in it. Those are just some suggestions, and you don't even have to agree with those as illusions, but that's kind of what he's talking about. We have illusions, things that give our lives meaning. And I'm sure you've been through this. Sometimes it just collapses. It falls apart. And we can think that our lives are crumbling and falling apart. But what Parker Palmer suggests is that perhaps at those times, we can really, really encounter God.
it on the shelf for a second.
The other thought that Parker Palmer suggests has to do with questions. You know, oftentimes we say that it's not so much the answers that are important, but the questions are. And we oftentimes say that in our own faith tradition here in the Episcopal Church, that this is a place where we can ask questions. And the questions are so important. One of my seminary professors once said to me, you know, once you ask the question, you're halfway to the answer. If you never ask the question, you never get anywhere. But being able to ask the questions and be able to discover and know, not so much just focus on the answers, but to enter into community together asking those questions. And Parker Palmer suggests that that's true, asking questions is significant, but he says there are two kinds of questions. There's what he refers to as honest questions and dishonest questions. Honest questions, dishonest questions. Here's what he means by that. An honest question is a question that I ask with the intent of listening to what you have to say, to help me perhaps understand something more, or get my arms around it, or grasp it a little bit. I really ask it of you to hear. Or maybe a question you ask it through reading, or whatever way you ask the question, we're open to hearing some thoughts and some answers on that. And it gets into me, and it can shape me, and truly add to my understanding and knowledge. Dishonest questions, he claims, are questions that we ask when we're really not interested in your answer. We kind of ask the question to try to test the person out. You know, do you have the same wisdom I have? Do you see things the same way? We ask the question with that intent. Not to really listen or hear them, but to kind of almost intimidate people sometimes. We use questions that way. Now, do you see things the same way I do? And we test people. And we're not really able or willing to hear or to listen to the answers. And he would suggest, obviously, that those honest questions are what we need to be involved in order to grow and continue to grow in our lives, and particularly in our spiritual lives. And I think in the Episcopal tradition, we hold on to that. There are many in other Christian parts of our Christian family. It's a great family we have in Christianity. Some who focus more on the answers. Got the answers. They're already here. And here they are. No need for any more questions. I think we try to live more into that idea. Let's delve into that even more, you know, and let's try to discover and learn more. Illusions and disillusionment. Honest questioning. Let me look at that first reading from the Acts of the Apostles. It's a very brief reading, but it is so packed. It is so packed. Peter, it says, is preaching. And he's preaching to what are referred to as the Gentiles. Now, in the world at that time, in the scriptures, when they use these phrases, you are either a Jew or you're not a Jew. You're the Jewish or you're not Jewish. And the not Jewish are the Gentiles. The Gentiles. And up in the early church, up until some of this time that we hear Peter preaching, most of the Christian community had been Jewish people who had become followers of Christ. And Peter is preaching to a crowd of people, and in that crowd are Gentiles, non-Jewish people. And the reading says that they listened to Peter, and it says the Holy Spirit fell upon all who heard this word. And it says the circumcised believers, those are the Jewish people, circumcised, the Jewish believers that were with Peter, the circumcised believers who had come with Peter were astounded. That's a strong word. Astounded that the gift of the Holy Spirit had been poured out even on the Gentiles. This is a moment of disillusionment. This is a moment of a whole different understanding of what the early faith community was meant to be, what the church was to become. When we read the scriptures, what we find oftentimes is the early followers of Jesus were discovering an emerging church, discovering an evolving church. Jesus never gave a blueprint or plans or writings of what the church was to look like. It could even be suggested that Jesus never even had a church in mind, but what he was trying to do was to reform his own faith tradition. But the followers of Jesus began to spread this word. The followers came together. They wouldn't have used the word church so much in the early church, but would have referred to it as the way, as followers of Jesus. But as this community begins to form, new things begin to emerge. I mean, this is an example today of this idea, an illusion, that Jesus came just to the Jews. And Peter and many of the followers have that idea. And all of a sudden, that collapses. And there's these other people coming into the church, into the walk of faith together. And this is a shocking thing. There's disillusioned. And they discover what that means, and they begin to ask questions, honest questions to themselves. What is this? Is this something new to discover? And they continue to walk in faith, ever for going forward and moving forward. That's what the early church was. And now we can sit here today, 2,000 years later, and say, well, thank God those early Christians got this all figured out. Thank goodness they shaped and formed the church that we now have. Again, we now have the church boxed, shaped, and we have it all wrapped up. But I would suggest to you that that model of the early church is still the model of church today. We cannot fall into the danger of asking dishonest questions, proving that we already know everything, but opening ourselves, as the early followers of Jesus did, to the action and work of the Spirit in their midst as they continue to see the church emerge and evolve before them. We're called to walk in that way too, to continue to see the Spirit working in our midst as we go forward, learning ever more deeply what this tradition means and who we are. And we always do it. We ask these honest questions. We face our illusions, always rooted, deeply rooted in the Scriptures, in the tradition, and all that's gone before us, where we gain our nourishment, we gain a sense of who we are, so that we can go forward and bloom and blossom in the world before us and continue to walk in faith as those early followers did. And so today, as we gather together during this Easter season, which is filled so much with this idea of the church going forward, next week we'll celebrate the Feast of Pentecost. This reading today from the Acts of the Apostles is oftentimes referred to as the second Pentecost. As the first Pentecost were the Jewish followers of Jesus experiencing the Holy Spirit upon them. And as it says, they began to speak in tongues and they were filled with a sense of going forth, filled with the gifts of the Spirit. This reading today is oftentimes referred to as the second Pentecost. These Gentile Christians who become part of this journey, part of this community of faith, they are too touched by the Holy Spirit, filled with the Holy Spirit, and go forth into the world. It's a whole new beginning. It's a whole new beginning. And we too, as we journey forth, are called to continually look to new beginnings, rooted ever deeply in our tradition and our Scriptures and who we are as a people, but being open to the emerging and evolving presence of the Spirit in our midst. Let us continue, not only in our world, but even in our church community here at St. Paul's, to ever be open to the working of the Spirit in our midst and lead and to follow where the Spirit is leading us and walk in faith, to transform ourselves, and to go forth transforming others.